Hi, this is David Franco and Teresa Dietze with Practical Work on Self. Our s chapter 17 tonight we'll be discussing. That's ch the chapter is called Chief Weakness, and then we'll be moving into chapter 18, Repairing the Past. David, do you have anything that you'd like to start with?
I've had several requests to speak more and at length about cleaning products, but I'm going to have to put that off until we've got through the chapters because we just don't have enough time to do both. It's a good topic. We'll take it up after the book is we're through with the book.
And for those of you who are on the recording, you might have to listen to last week's recording to understand that this is actually pertinent.
We would all be surprised as to how pertinent that is. But nevertheless, I have no other comments, and I'm very excited to jump back into the chapter.
Well, you just jumped back into the red-faced donkey, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I have my glasses here. Thank you.
Okay. So would you like me to read the header for Chief Weakness?
Yes, I would, please.
All right. We must see what we ought to do and know the weakness which makes us unable to do it. This weakness is called chief feature. We usually think of this weakness as the best and nicest part of ourselves.
You know, I read through the chapter again a few hours ago and appreciated it quite a bit again this time. It's such an interesting thing to me that I don't know how many times I've read this chapter, and I'm sure that there's a great deal that I have yet to learn. But every time I read it, I am, in fact, able to get more out of it. And I think partly because of the conversations we've had over the last few weeks, and last week's chapter on Red-Faced Donkey helped me see this chapter in a new way. And I think it's worth, and we do have the time, to take some, it's just a few pages, to get into some of the dialogue about this chapter. Particularly when we get to the end of the chapter, there's some very interesting invitations given to us by the author. And, you know, once again, we're working with Practical Work on Self, a book by E.J. Gold. And let's see where we go with it. I'm going to basically read the chapter. I'm going to skip around a teeny bit, but let's just get started. And the first paragraph is, every small effort to awaken the machine is a small act toward the eventual development of the will of the non-phenomenal self over the will of the machine. I would say if there's any paragraph in this series that you want to take, copy, and paste on your wall, it's that particular paragraph, because we have to remember that every moment, in every angle that every chapter gives us, we have a chance to make a small effort at awakening the machine. And when we pull in the effort and attention from the non-phenomenal self, from our essential self, and we apply it to awakening the machine, that's a moment, ever so small, of a development of the will of the non-phenomenal self over the will of the machine. And it's like taking, like some people, you know, say, well, you should take vitamins or supplements or things like that. And you take it, it's just a pill, right? How do you know it's doing anything? But over time, you might notice that. In the same way, these small efforts, if done with a certain intensity, allow us to accumulate something in our essence banks, as I call it. To really suffer intentional purgatory, we must see what we ought to do and know the weakness of the machine that makes us unable to do what we should do. This inherent flaw in the machine we can call our chief weakness. We usually think of this weakness as the best and nicest part of ourselves. The chief weakness is only one of the many destructive results of having lived our lives immersed in helpless identification with the sleeping machine. So a lot of what we need to do, I'm not sure if Susan made it back.
No.
But we recall last week when she was saying suddenly it came upon her. She had a realization that the machine and the sleeping machine is almost is the key, ever present. It's chasing us all the time. And so what can we do? We can make small efforts, right? Remember the doorway exercise as an example, the pond exercise. We're gaining a portfolio. We're investing properly in this development. One factor by which we can recognize our chief weakness is that it requires no effort at all to develop it and no special effort to maintain its manifestations. And then the great line, the being is born among a sleeping people. That's where we find ourselves. And we need to discern and distinguish that. And as we do, we gain a toehold on a whole new planet, really. And then jumping ahead a little bit, in our ordinary state, the idea, know thyself, means nothing, because our education does not prepare us to understand what human life is for. And if we do not know our purpose for life in the human biological machine, we cannot possibly suspect that the machine is not functioning as a transformational apparatus. As ignorant as our ordinary education leaves us, not only do we know nothing about the ordinary uses of the machine as it exists in nature, but we would never in the ordinary course of events, which is to say, without the intentional influence of a school, discover the really unique purpose to which it can be put. Thus, only rarely do a few human beings in any generation ever happen to learn about intentional evolution. What do you think is meant by that particular paragraph? Without the intentional influence of a school. Any thoughts? Still online?
Yep.
Everybody's thinking.
Sinhog said, we have no chance. We would have no chance.
Yeah, we would have no chance unless that normal operation of the sleeping machine taking its education from life isn't somehow interrupted. Our lives were interrupted. Everybody that's here, our lives were interrupted. Some people went to Ireland, and their lives were interrupted. A grain of sand was placed in their shoe, a pebble, that the irritant had to be scratched enough so that now they're spending ungodly amounts of time at late hours trying to scratch that toe. So our lives were interrupted somehow by something. Something was left. An artifact was left in our path. And those of us who have spent some time along this path working in this way, we also have the opportunity to, let's say, leave things in the paths of others to the extent we can. And to the extent we're able to do that in a way of full integrity and as well as we're able to leave something that somebody might be able to use. So don't discard that possibility either.
Townsend Girl said, the school of intention to train ourselves to have intention.
Nice. Yeah. It came up for me. I was at another event over the weekend, and it came up for me, this idea of intentionality. And as you're bringing that up, Townsend Girl, what, you know, we can understand our intentions. When we're doing just about anything, if we slow down just 1 mile an hour from the constant, just automatic behavior we have, we can get a sense. And we can sense our intention at that moment. What's your intention? What was it that you bring to the table with that seasoning of intention that comes forth? And then we can intend in a whole different way.
So it could be natural seasoning instead of MSG seasoning.
That's right. Organic, certified. When it comes to protecting itself from observation, the machine is very clever. This is, I think, what Susan began to notice last week. Very clever.
Diabolical.
It's diabolical. I'm blown away by how creative the ego is, in my case. Just thoroughly, always has a place for itself. If the machine is very clever, we will never be able to observe the chief weakness if we try to look for it directly. Therefore, we must find a way to observe it indirectly. Observe the traces of its activities, because when the chief weakness is active, that is to say, during periods of deep sleep of the machine, our attention is prevented by the machine's density from observing the chief weakness actually at work. So can we do anything?
Mm-hmm.
Is it anything possible? Or are we stuck? Here it says you can't look at it directly.
Townsend Girl said, my HBM, human biological machine, has been just kicking my non-phenomenal self's butt.
Yeah. Now, that's a great way of beginning to look at it and beginning to see things in that manner. It's, I am not that. Remember that exercise?
Not that this,
was
not
a few
that.
Chapters.
I'd like to point out that a lot of people right now are in fairly intense and fairly transformative conflict internally, and thinking about topics that don't generally come up, like the death of the identity and fear of death, because they're changing so quickly. I've seen a number of people in the last week independently bring this topic up. And I want to point out that this conflict between the HBM, the human biological machine, the sleeping machine, and the non-phenomenal self, the essence, that conflict is in nature the battle or the struggle of the sorcerers, and those conflicts are not to be wasted or feared, but rather if we lean into that kind of conflict and we pay very close attention to the different elements on the two sides of the conflict, then that we can use that friction creatively to continue to wake ourselves up, and that's very good fuel for inner growth.
Right. So then when something is going on, when there's some activity, when there's some struggle like that, at least you can see something. At least you can possibly see something at those moments. When everything is blasé,
then you have no chance. You're not in the school.
No.
Now, Townsend Girl said, we are to look out of the corner of our phenomenal eyes.
Nice.
Might get a glimpse. Yeah.
David,
Yes, sir.
In order to talk in this on the writings, what we are doing now, could we review, if I understand well, what is really a chief weakness in an example? Could that be, as I understand, some trait of your personality that comes easy on you? For instance, I've seen that some people are overly kind all the time, or some people are all the time trying to be funny or something like that. Other people try to be helpful all the time, and they seem to be natural on them, and it comes easy on them. They try to be liked or something like that, I guess.
Yeah.
Or they maybe
yeah.
are natural like that. Those would be chief weakness examples?
Potentially, those could be chief weaknesses.
Okay.
Yeah. And EJ, at the beginning, he says that it's an inherent flaw. Okay? It's an inherent flaw.
David, I want to throw something out.
Good.
Because right now I am, as T was referring, I'm a person in a lot of deep work and a lot of deep transition. And I would say right now I cannot identify my chief weakness, but I hope I'm getting closer to it, because what I've identified in the last couple of weeks are some very strong patterns that I actually thought that I had solved and that I was completely devoid of them, and they were just lurking underneath, and they were still so strong I didn't even have an awareness they existed. And
right.
I've had some disturbances in the last couple of weeks, and I'm grateful for the disturbances, because now they've brought light to these very strong patterns. And
nice.
Listening to this conversation, it's giving me hope as I keep digging into these patterns, that I'll get to the point of convergence, and that might be my chief weakness. I mean, I'm just sort of philosophizing right now.
Yeah. Let me ask you a quick question. Have you ever been able to master or become quite competent in anything in your life?
Yes.
Yes, you have, right?
Yes. I was an excellent CPA at one point in this lifetime.
And how did you do that? How did you go about doing it? Did you go to college, took the CPA exam, and then you were an expert?
Not at all. I studied, I went to college, and I got my initial training. And then I went to work with a myriad of firms, large firms, small firms, for many years, and then I worked on my own. I mean, I worked hard at my craft for 20 years.
20 years? And then you were pretty decent at it, right?
Right.
Yeah. What did Silverdale tell us the other week? How long did he stay? Hmm?
18 years of working with the Gurdjieffian teachings day in and day out for hours and hours and hours during the day.
Yeah.
I would call it a full-time job.
It's funny because this is what I was saying to you earlier today. It takes a long time. You expect to get it in 3 months, you know.
And right. So we allow ourselves to have a little patience with ourselves.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because T and I had this conversation today.
Yeah, well, there it is. There it is again. And you know, it's just that I have a great deal of faith in my essential self, that it will out. It will win the race. It's always applying itself against this problem. And I know that progress gets made.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been involved with this particular school for 25 years. And other schools before that.
Hi.
So,
I don't mean to interrupt. Just whenever you're done, I'd like to ask a question, too.
Is that Jenny? Are you at the 783 number?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, I wondered who joined us. Go ahead.
Okay, hi, I'm Jenny. I've been listening in for on the computer for a number of weeks, but this is my first time to get to join you live.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here participating. So I thought of a number of things that could be a chief weakness, but the one that struck me the strongest was my idea of trying to live life as a perfectionist, because I think at one point I thought that that was a wonderful thing, and now I no longer do. And with Teresa's help, I keep noticing myself in various parts of my life where perfectionism tries to rear its ugly head and get in the way. But I guess my big question is, in the header of the chapter, when it talks about that the weakness that we have inherent in our body, which makes us unable to do it. So, like, I guess I don't know how to phrase the question exactly, but if I realize that this perfectionism is an issue for me, and I'm kind of working at working at maybe disarming that, then is there something else about it that I'm not understanding about why that would be stopping me from succeeding?
Yeah, is Silverdale there?
Yes.
Did you want to weigh in on that one?
Let me read his comments that he's put so far while he gets onto the phone. We're all a product of conditioning and thus an involuntary slave to outer and inner forces greater than ourselves. And Path World, you mean I'm making progress? What is really me? And Silverdale, self-observation enables to convince ourselves of this incontestable fact. And then next we try to identify and understand our non-phenomenal self. And then Townsley Girl, which inconvertible fact? And Silverdale, gradually we come to see that the non-phenomenal self is the pleasurable vibratory sensation which is submerged by the historical personality. Now, Silverdale's on the line now, and maybe we can come back to Jenny's train of thought here. Jenny, would you like to ask your question again?
Well, I guess my question is, am I missing something when I read that in the opening paragraph of the chapter, that opening statement, that we must see what we ought to do and know the weakness, which makes us unable to do it. So suppose that with the first part of that sentence, I see that I know what I ought to do, which is to basically give up this idea of living life perfectly.
Wait. What if your idea of what you ought to do would be to be compassionate to yourself? I think we've been around the block on this one.
Okay. And then know the weakness which makes us unable to do it.
Well, so, and you know, really what it is it's not understanding what each of these words is referring to and what the full implications of that reference point is. So, for example, when that paragraph starts off, to really suffer intentional purgatory presumes that you already are in touch with your non-phenomenal self. When your non-phenomenal self is an active part of yourself, then you can suffer intentional purgatory. So then when we get to that next word, we must see what we ought to do, that we refers to a developed developed non-phenomenal part of yourself. The animating force that causes you to consider yourself to be alive. And then once your non-phenomenal self is functioning as it should be, then we're able to see what makes our machine, that is our historical personality, which is entirely a product of conditioning and an involuntary slave from the moment of conception to the moment of last breath. So then our non-phenomenal self recognizes what can
be done for the historical personality in order to bring the two of them together in harmony, like a happy marriage, mm-hmm. if such a thing is possible.
It may or may not be, George, but what we're talking, one thing I want to modify is that we're not looking to achieve a particular personality goal here. The goal here is, as stated, is the eventual development of the will of the non-phenomenal self. So we're literally talking, and here's where I wish we had a little bit more background with HBM. We're talking about, in a sense, two electrical forces is how you can look at it. This was the big breakthrough for me. Within me is this non-phenomenal self that is there. And there's a sleeping machine. And as they interplay and work together in a certain way, it creates conflict, right? Doesn't that make sense? There's conflict? Because the sleeping machine has a very creative and extensive agenda for me. There's a lot it would like me to do all the time. Whereas the essential, the non-phenomenal self is in these moments of awakening, seeking to go somewhere, seeking to develop in a certain manner, it creates a conflict. Now, if we can identify something called chief weakness, how would we go about doing that is the question. And so there are two elements here, and if you go to that same second paragraph, and we look at it, it goes on, this inherent flaw in the machine we can call our chief weakness. I'm looking for the pair where it says that the chief weakness is something we can use.
Well, it's right here on the bottom of last paragraph of 139. Our chief weakness is something we have, whether we wish it or not. We cannot just decide it out of existence. And the situation will never improve by sheer force of mental imagination. If we've learned anything about work, we realize that our chief weakness, as with all mechanicalities of the machine, can be an instrument for the awakening of the machine.
Yeah, that was the phrase I'm looking for. So what do we think that means? Let's look at that phrase for just a little bit. What does it mean that something can be an instrument for the awakening of the machine? I'm going to leave that on the stove for a minute, so until we can work with it a bit.
Hey, Jalen.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm on the right track here. But this is kind of reminding me, like two chapters ago, we had a conversation about death can be either your machine can kind of go back to sleep or can also propel you to a great awakening.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel like it's a similar experience being described here, that once we can get to the point of sensing and identifying our chief weakness, it's almost like we should be passing through some doorway. I would think that would lead to tremendous propulsion and growth and awakening.
And what did Silverdale tell us about the very first paragraph or the second paragraph when he's talking about what does it presume?
He was presuming that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got it.
He was presuming, I'm sorry, he, Silverdale, he was saying that presuming that we're already working to awaken, there's already some type of internal process occurring. I mean, I'm not paraphrasing him correctly.
Yeah, but something is happening with the non-phenomenal self, right? It's
right.
Starting up.
Yeah,
only then. It's only then are we, in a sense, worthy to enter into the battle.
We just
right.
lost visuals of you, David, just so you know.
You lost?
Yeah, you went black. So, but we can continue on the auditory channel, I think. Do you computer people, can you hear us? Or just not?
Can they hear?
Anyone want to? I don't see anything on the screen right now that indicates that they can hear us. So I'm going to pause the recording until... No, they lost that too.
You lost the recording?
Okay. So, Guillermo, go ahead and ask your question.
The question is regarding the last question that David said before the breaking. Is the just by the mere act of having found ourselves our chief weakness or one of those, is not just an act of the awakened machine, let alone that we... From then on, that we have already identified that chief weakness, let alone that, that we can observe it and find and be on guard, when are we going to start acting that role again? So we are observing that chief weakness now from a different perspective. So two stages, having found it, targeted, and second, observe it from, let's say, the non-phenomenal says the non-phenomenal self eyes. Wouldn't those two steps would be an awakened machine?
Well, it seems to say something about we must see what we ought to do and know the weakness that makes us unable to do it. So there's something about this thing called chief feature that makes us unable to do something, right?
I'd like to pull in part of the last page. Maybe we can head into that, and because I'd like to bring the content in, or can I just go into that?
Well, I guess we can. I kind of wanted to sit with this question, this burning question. How can chief weakness be an instrument for the awakening of the machine? If we have learned anything about work, we realize that our chief weakness, as with all mechanicalities of the machine, can be an instrument for the awakening of the machine.
Well, that's why I was saying to you, the moment if there is no chief weakness to observe, you are sleeping. The moment that you identify that, you are awake. That is the tool. It's a tool.
But if the machine, as Susan is telling us, and the literature is telling us, the machine is constantly striving to stay in a sleeping state, and then there's something called chief weakness, and we find it, we can observe it about ourselves. So if that's there, what's the chief weakness in essence trying to do? And this is very, very generalized and maybe even to the point of inaccuracy. But what's it trying to do?
What do you mean by trying to do?
The chief weakness.
Right. Do you mean what is its aim?
Yeah.
What's its agenda?
Yeah. Does it have an agenda, and what's it trying to, what is that agenda?
So the agenda might be to try and make people love you.
Yeah. Or to pay attention to you, or to understand how great you actually are.
Now, Sinhog said, let the human biological machine, the ego, survive. And yes, I think a lot of times that the chief weakness can be very tangled up with survival strategies. And
You bet.
in a lot of instances, the chief weakness, probably in most instances, the chief weakness will be the key or core or most prevalent survival strategy that the ego has. But I don't believe that it necessarily is in every single case, but I think it is in most cases.
Let's just say it's a theme running through many things. And so let's just very carefully then take on one more sentence at the bottom of 139. A weakness is not easy to see and can seldom be shown to us by another. This has to do with how we come to know things, how we understand. Maybe you'll take my word for it. Maybe I'll take your word for it. But that's not the kind of deep all the way down to the toes understanding, is it? We must see it. We must observe impartially for a very long time before we see our own truth, before we see our own chief weakness. Only then, when we see it for ourselves, will we really believe in its existence and in its power.
And it is
We must.
powerful. It's extremely powerful. It's just like push the non-phenomenal self over and tie it up and gag it. It's powerful.
It throws me off now with all the examples that I had. I thought I had it, but if it says it is often seldom be able to be observed by the other ones, I thought that your chief weakness will be something that could be
Oh,
easily.
others. No, others might be able to observe it. And they might
Oh,
even
yeah.
attempt to tell you. And they might be telling you, and they might be telling you accurately. That's
And it might be like
different.
telling an alcoholic that they're an alcoholic some of the time, too.
And that's the point. I mean, is that we're in such a different state of knowledge and self-observation that we don't want to hear that. In fact, we can't hear it. It's called buffer. We're buffered against hearing it or seeing things that may make us realize it.
And we'll blame and squirm around and twist things around in our mind and distort things that we know are the facts and flip back and forth almost like multiple personalities from the outside, imagining that we have some kind of congruence or consistency in order to protect that and hide it from ourselves. And we'll give characteristics to other people that are actually our own, all kinds of things like this.
And then the last sentence in the next paragraph. Our work just begins when we can see exactly what it is that we must struggle against.
Now
The
this, oh,
next
I'm sorry.
paragraph. Go ahead.
I just wanted to earmark this next short paragraph is the one that I wanted to bring in a few minutes ago. But
Yeah.
what is our enemy now can also be our greatest ally in the work. One big part of work is to learn how to turn these involuntary enemies into friends for work. That's very, very central and important, and it also speaks to the struggle of sorcerers.
Do you think you could give us some concrete examples of what you mean?
Sure. Suppose one was a perfectionist.
That's hard to imagine, but try it anyway.
And suppose that whenever one tried to do one's inner work, one would get into really deep self-criticism and get derailed and define what one needed to do in a negative way and then judge oneself for that and get all bollocksed up. And then try to resist that and try not to do it. And the more you try not to do it out of trying to be a better person or a different person or a spiritually correct person or all the persons that one's supposed to be, suppose one gets all bollocksed up in that. And then suppose that the antidote, one of the antidotes for that or one of the balancing factors is to bring in, like to ask oneself something like, what is the most compassionate thing I can do for myself in this moment? And then to make space for oneself and to kind of relax into exploring and pulling forth different parts of oneself that can offer a different kind of experience. And suppose that in that work, every time the perfectionist thing started to bollocks you up, then you said, aha, there it is, the pattern's coming up. Oh, I really would like to focus on bringing my attention to this and seeing how it operates in me so that I can catch it sooner every time and really see exactly how it works. And instead of just trying to force myself to stop it and be different, I can observe it with such neutrality that compassion becomes a lot easier. And then there's two opposing forces, the compassion and the self-criticism, but the enemy, which would be the self-criticism, would remind you to focus on the compassion. And as you're more and more into the struggle, you catch it in finer and finer ways, and so that you can tell when it's just even happening just a little bit, and you get more and more conscious that way.
Hey, Kate.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, let's just say that perfectionism is somebody's chief feature, which it may or may not be. Only they can discover that. Let's say it is. It would be insidious in other ways, too. And like, for instance, they would say they decide that they're going to meditate once a day. But in order to meditate, the light has to be right. They have to have eaten at the right amount of food at a right time. And, they have to be not too busy, not too many things to do during that day. So it would creep in very mundane ways. Very mundane ways. That's when you can catch a glimpse of it. You can catch a glimpse of it sidelong I don't remember Townsie Girl's comment, but, you know, this sidelong glance from the non-phenomenal self. You know, yeah, that is funny. And that's how you catch it, but it'll be in very mundane things, too. Very suddenly, this little thing becomes an issue. Now, does that help in terms of an example?
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's excellent in terms of the subtle aspects. I think there's bold, obvious aspects, and then there's super subtle ones that slip in there without barely being seen, and they all operate at the same time sometimes. We've got a few comments. Silverdale, in order to facilitate the growth and development of the non-phenomenal self, the historic personality must be pacified. By adopting a strategy of pacification of the historical personality, self-observation is greatly facilitated. Then Sinhog, nice exposition, Teresa. I have a big problem with compassion for myself. And then Silverdale, we bear in mind and recall that we are involuntary slaves to our conditioning from the moment of conception through the course of living to our last breath. In this way, our non-phenomenal self becomes the active force within our own trinity.
So, T, can I make a comment now?
Absolutely.
I got to tell you something funny that I'm over here privately amused at, and I'd just be curious to see what you all think. We spend so much time talking about Trinity, and I'm sitting here, like, doodling on my pad of paper as to what my chief weakness is, and I've got one circle is my relationship with men, my second circle is my relationship with women, and my third circle is my relationship with myself. Isn't that pretty funny? So I'm sitting here, like, writing down, let's see, what do I do with men? How do I treat women? What's my relationship like with women? What's my relationship like with myself? And then I'm drawing these lines back and forth, and I just started giggling about the whole Trinity concept.
Well, all I have to say is you're right, you're right, you're right.
Formation.
How can we struggle against our chief weakness when it is only active during periods of deep sleep and is therefore invisible to our observation? We can listen to the machine's thoughts and words as if listening to a stranger speaking on a radio over a long distance. We may be very shocked to hear some of the ideas which spring from the mouth of that machine, but do not reflect our ideas at all. I was hoping to have a video game, and the video game was such that you controlled an avatar. Do people generally know what that is? People who have gamed know what that is.
Don't assume.
You have a character within the game, right? And you're sitting here controlling that character. And I thought, well, gosh, let's say they had a machine like that, that you could have an avatar, you can select whatever avatar you wanted. And I thought that I would select myself as my own avatar. And I'd program it to do the things that I do. And I'd continue to work it until the computer avatar was learning more how to behave like me.
You have to observe yourself to do it. Beautiful.
So
it would be very interesting to do that with a number of people and discover by how their avatar acted, how they viewed themselves. Reminds me of an episode in Red Dwarf, which is a British sci-fi comedy, where the main character, he ended up getting this creature was pretending to be like him, and there was an imposter, and they had to decide which of the two was him. And so they said, okay, now play Jimi Hendrix. And one of them is playing really, really, really horribly, and the other one's playing really, really, really well, and they shoot the one that's doing really, really well. And he goes, how do you know that was me? You know, because he thinks that wasn't me, because he thinks he sounds that way, and that's in his imagination of how he is. But to everybody else, it was really, really obvious which one was the imposter. But to him, he couldn't tell the difference.
And so we come again to the idea of working in groups. When we work in a group, we may be able to work with others to get a hint about how we are, how we work, what our chief weakness might be, and then once we start getting these hints, then we can begin to work with it and see how it moves into every area we have. And then we have a worthy battle, in a sense. But who is it that has the really worthy battle? The non-phenomenal self. Only as it grows, in a sense, as it grows enough, does it have enough strength to have the ability to observe enough so that it can begin to observe something as fundamental in the sleeping machine as the chief weakness? And then you really have you really have a ride at that point. In the Castaneda, the books that Castaneda wrote, Don Juan, this character that he had, who may or may not have been real, indicates that when you get to a certain level as a shaman, that you find a worthy opponent. And Don Juan wound up having a worthy opponent who he had to battle magically. So you can imagine in an external way like that, right? You can see, yeah, that makes sense. When you're that good, you're at that level, and you're battling somebody that's really good, you're going to wind up developing your own skills, right? Can't we see that? The difference is that this story, this piece of fiction, this short story that we're talking about, is this short story about our own personal, individual lives. We're the character. We're the player. And in a sense, we've been given our worthy opponent. Isn't that cool? So there you go.
So Townsy Girl said, oh, wow, after what David said just now, T's explanation of perfection clicked even deeper. Thank you, T, for the example. It resonates or groks well. Now, Ginger Rogers said, why were you doing that? What happened with the avatar and yourself? And she said she was a little bit puzzled. I wasn't quite sure what she meant, so she's going to keep working on that.
Well, the reason I made it like myself, most people would choose like an avatar that was like a superhero or something, right? You can leap tall buildings and dig deep holes and things like that, various superpowers. Well, I'm more interested in this avatar that I've taken on, this one right here that I'm born in, and I want to drive it. And then when I get, and as the it starts to work within its own constraints, it'll start doing what it does by itself. Then I can let somebody else run the character because it's mechanical, right?
We seem to be at a pausing place. Would you like to do the tape change at this point?
Hang on. Yeah.
Okay.